The Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast is proud to be sponsored by Dr. Spork's 3D Terrain. From retro greenskin outposts to elven fortresses and obelisks, this is hands down the best nostalgic scenery you'll find out there, and all at stupidly reasonable prices. Check it out for yourself by heading over to bedroombattlefields.com/spork, that's S-P-O-R-K, and turn your tabletop into a scene from White Dwarf circa 1994. Andy Chambers not included. Brought to you by bedroombattlefields.com, this is the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. From accessible down-to-earth terrain tutorials to space weirdos battle reports, these are just some of the videos you'll find on the Gergen Gaming YouTube channel. On this episode, I speak to the channel's creator, Anthony, about the games and projects he loves. His YouTube channel just turned one recently, so I figured that was a good place to start.
You know, a buddy of mine, I would always take pictures of my stuff and say, hey, you gotta look at this. And he has a pretty big YouTube channel, and he just asked me, why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you putting this online? I said, okay. And he just said, don't be lazy about it. So I decided to keep her going and keep to a deadline.
Is that what he meant by don't be lazy? Just to like keep putting stuff out?
Yes, in fact, and I don't know whether or not I should be giving away his secret rituals, but he gave me a very nice knife that had a almost a scale pattern on it. I forget the brand, and as he hands me this knife, he says, you can either be a dragon or a turtle. That's your choice. And, you know, after that, I just decided I would systematically abandon my family for 10 to 16 hours a week and decide to work on hobby stuff.
And I take it you enjoy it, that you've kept doing it for a year.
Oh, I've been doing this for a while. And, you know, to anyone who's seen my stuff, you can tell that it's definitely pedestrian. It's novice. It's just making stuff out of trash. But that's the fun part for me. You know, like I said, I have a family and my kids love doing this kind of stuff. My wife loves the fact that my kids love doing that kind of stuff so that she can send them downstairs and they can play with me.
Yeah, and I think as well, like a channel like yourself, you're using very grounded kind of I was going to say ingredients as if you're doing cooking, but materials that you're using, you know, that everything seems very accessible, and I think people will be attracted to that, because you will get some tutorials out there that are fantastic, especially the end products, but they do maybe ask a bit more in terms of what you have accessible to you at the time. So I think what you're doing, what you're producing, is great, but the fact that you're doing it from very available, freely available materials is a big plus as well.
And actually, it's not just the materials that are meant to be accessible, but you're 100% right on that. The other thing I'm trying to really help people reach is a skill level. And by that, I mean, when you see people, one of my big inspirations was Black Magic Craft. I would watch his videos and just be in awe. Like, these could be put in a movie, you know what I mean? And my immediate thought would be, okay, how do I dumb this down for my own personal skill level, which at the time would be almost nothing. So my thought is, like you said, how can you use cheap and accessible ingredients, but also how can someone who isn't a proper artist, someone who has a couple hours on the weekend to do this kind of thing, how would they do it?
What is that about terrain then that attracts you to producing it? Because we see all kinds of approaches in the hobby. You know, some folks just prefer to buy their terrain. Even some folks will buy like totally pre-painted terrain, whereas other folks want to make it totally from scratch. Why do you fall into this approach? What is it about the creation of terrain that obviously excites you so much?
Well, I like a little bit of everything. I do have some terrain that I've bought. I don't really use it, but I don't know. I remember when I first started getting into the hobby, I was messing around with Song of Blades and Heroes, and I had some miniatures that I'd collected, but no terrain to speak of. Didn't have a battle mat, didn't have anywhere to play, and my immediate thought was, what do? I don't want to just use pop cans and books, so where do we go from there? And I think the first thing I ever made was a cobblestone wall. I think it was based off one of the Terrain Tutors videos, and going back, it's terrible. I still have these walls, but it's just a piece of pink foam that I drew circles into, didn't prime, didn't do anything. So it's the same thing I make now, just, you know, smaller, not as good.
You talk about Song of Blades and Heroes there. So was that the first game you discovered in the hobby? And you know, when was that?
So I've actually never played Song of Blades and Heroes with somebody else. The only time I've played it was on, you know, kind of two-handed, just smushing minis together. But when I first started getting into the hobby, it was always board games. It was always board games. Growing up, I still have closet full of board games. I love them all. But I remember as a kid, I saw my cousins playing, I think it was D&D or some sort of miniatures game. And this would have been, 25 years ago. And I just saw it across the room at my grandparents' house. And I just thought, yeah, that's what I want to do. And I tried to get into D&D a couple of times, but, you know, my friend group really wasn't too into it, or, you know, I had no idea what I was doing. I think the first campaign we did, I was using a 3.5 player's handbook and a 4th edition starter's monster manual, just kind of mashing stuff together and making it up on the fly. And then when I actually got into the hobby, like the wargaming hobby, I think it was with a little bit of Song of Blades and Heroes. And that's kind of when One Page Rules was coming out, maybe a little bit before. But it was all kind of around that. Because I told everyone I know, there's no way I'm getting into Warhammer. Financially, I can't swing that.
And have you always stuck by that? You never done any of the Games Workshop stuff?
I've never played any of them. I bought some of the minis. But yeah, even as far as their games go, the bigger ones. Because I have the starter set for Kill Team. But in reality, I just wanted the minis, you know? So the game, I've read the rule books many times, and they never really felt intuitive. It wasn't just like, oh, I get this now, let's rock and roll, which is kind of my whole ethos. I don't have a lot of time to sit there and study. I just want to play the game and have some fun.
So as you mentioned, you're playing Song of Blades and Heroes solo. What about the other games? Are you playing them against another version of yourself as well?
Yeah, a little bit, especially for like the channel stuff. Just about every game I've played so far has been just a two-handed game where I'm kind of simulating the battle. And I do have an emotional stake in who wins, because I'll sit there, and before I play the game, I know these minis, I know their personality, I have a basic story written around them, and I know who I want to win, and sometimes that doesn't happen. But just recently, a good friend of mine from church, he and I played a game of Sword Weirdos. It was my first game. It was his first game. And we recorded that, and I'll be releasing it tomorrow. So I think at the time of when this drops, it'll be the week beforehand.
What did you make of the game?
It was a good one. It was really fun. And, you know, he's a good buddy, so he brought over some beers, and what should have been an hour and a half long game lasted 5 hours because we're just chit-chatting. And at one point, my phone died, so that was another hour and a half break, just chilling. So it was a good time. It was a real good time.
What's your approach when it comes to sort of storytelling and narrative on the tabletop?
Well, you've been talking about narrative games for a while, and it's something that now that I've, what would you say, I'm a little more into the hobby, a little more into the gaming. The narrative style is a lot more. I see what you're talking about, because at first when I heard you guys talking about, oh, it's got to be narrative, I want an actual story behind it, I'm just thinking I want to get some minis on the table and, you know, smash them together like action figures. But then as we get further in the hobby, my buddies and I, it's just like, you know what, we want to remove ourselves just a step away from that smashing action figures together. And it seems like the longer we play, the slower we're stepping away from just the basic control the points.
Yeah, it's like that with me. You know, if I'm trying a new game, then maybe we'll still play a scenario, but it won't be, you know, it'll be more about just learning the game and getting a shot at moving it all around and stuff. But yeah, after a few turns of the same game, after a few experiences of the same game, you kind of crave that story and purpose for it, don't you?
Oh, for sure. And the crazy thing is, it's not that hard to do. I mean, even now, it's the same basic game. It is still, you know, either control the points or save the guy or do the thing. At the end of the day, mechanically, you're just doing a thing, but you're giving yourself a reason, you're giving the mini a name, something like that, to breathe a little more life into it.
Yeah, and I mean, you don't have to be Brandon Sanderson or Joe Abercrombie to come up with the stories. It could be as simple as, you know, this guy's a dick and, you know, he's trying to do this thing, we're trying to stop him. Like, and you don't have to come to the table with the narrative completely fleshed out. Sometimes it's better to take the less is more approach and have that very basic structure, and then it kind of fills in the blanks with what happens on the tabletop. That's personally what kind of attracts me to the storytelling side of it anyway.
Oh, 100%. And the other fun thing is, you know, if you kind of, while you're painting your minis, think about who they are, especially if they're a fun mini with a little bit of character to them. Think about who they are and how they act, what they would do, what their basic temperament is. You know, you kind of know how they will play on the table. And their stats can reflect that. And it's just really fun to do that, to get a read on a person. In fact, the report coming out tomorrow, the Sword Weirdos game, it was Vikings versus Orcs. And what we wanted to do was have kind of a, I think my force of Orcs was about 10% bigger than his Vikings. And they just have to control a bridge and decide whether or not they're going to light a beacon calling for help or protect their longhouse with all the, you know, women and children inside. And like I said, at the end of the day, it's just controlling the points, but putting that into context makes it so much more tense. Like, here's what I'm protecting, here's what I'm doing, and here's why this point's important, why that point's important. But as I was writing this, or as I was editing the video, I texted my buddy, like, okay, you have names for all these guys. What are their basic personalities? Just give me a single trait about them so that when I write this script, I can put all of that into context.
So what goes into filming a battle report then? What's the process when you compare that to if you were literally just having a game yourself or with a friend and it wasn't getting filmed?
So, I'm a terrible cinematographer. Anyone who's watched my videos, like, it's some gorilla stuff. I'm using probably the cheapest phone you can buy at the store. I've got a little editing software, and I've looked up how to film battle reports before. Like, I've tried to figure this out, and all of them say, okay, start out with a $40,000 camera. You need $10,000 worth of lights and a studio. Or they might as well for my purposes. So I literally have my phone, I have my table, and I have a cheap little tripod. And just every turn, I try and get a shot that will encompass all the action of the miniature taking. If they're a ranged miniature, I'll try to encompass the target that they're going to take. And then I just film the turn from that particular angle. And then with the editing, I basically just edit out all the movement, except for maybe a die roll. And it basically boils down to a glorified slideshow.
So how many battle reports have you filmed so far on your channel?
I want to say I've done 6 of the Space Weirdos, one-page rules, and then this one coming out is going to be Sword Weirdos. In fact, that one-page rules report was for the big campaign that we're doing in the Discord.
What is that about? Just going back to Space Weirdos, there, you've done 5 or 6, I think, battle reports on that. You obviously enjoy that game. What is it about it that keeps you coming back to it?
Man, well, the thing that hooked me in was the art. Like, just seeing that cover, I was in. Like, you got me. You got me on the hook. All you have to do is not screw it up. And they didn't. I think the thing about it that got me was just the elegance of the rules. Just, we're going to do this quick, dirty. You can do it on a 2x2 board and just going to rock and roll. Like, there's very little that it takes to make a warband. I think you can do it in 10 minutes if you know what you're doing, even less if you're using the app. I like the elegance of the sticks, the fact that we're not measuring for line of sight, we're not doing any of that, and the RPG dice are just beautiful. What was it? There was an article written a while ago on why using 2d6, 2d8s, 2d10s, whatever it is statistically so much more significant than doing just a single d6 versus d8. And it just kind of highlighted the absolute elegance of the game. So that's probably what attracts me to Space Weirdos. And the fact that it's just a small magazine, like you can just hand your buddy the book and go, here, figure it out.
Yeah. How do you find it compares to Sword Weirdos then, which you've been playing too?
You know what? I'm a little disappointed to say I really prefer Space Weirdos. I like what Sword Weirdos is going for. They didn't want it to be just a reskin of Space Weirdos. They didn't want to just do, okay, now instead of doing guns, we're doing bows. So they kind of added some D&D elements to it. They added some class-based elements, just things like that. And personally, I prefer Sword Weirdos. I think it's because I might be a little too dumb. That might just be it. It's a lot to keep track of, especially when you're having a few beers and you're just trying to get the game.
And what about... Well, let's talk about Gaslands for a second. What attracts you to Gaslands?
Probably the fact that, we're using Hot Wheel cars. Hot Wheels are the perfect toy because I have two sons and a daughter. And for a couple of, almost a year, maybe even more, every time I went to the store, which I don't go too much, my wife usually does most of the shopping, but every time I went to the store, I'd pick my son up a Hot Wheels. And then when my second son was born, I'd pick up two. And after a while, my wife had to grab me by the shirt collar and go, this needs to stop. it has nothing to do with the money. It's the fact that there are buckets of Hot Wheels. And if I remember correctly, you have a daughter, right? Just the one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you have this, but just I bequeathed all my Hot Wheels to my sons. And it's gotten to the point where we actually, every couple of months, we'll just cycle out new ones because we got to put all of them away, cycle out new ones. Because if we have more than, 20 to 30 out at a time, it just ends up strewn across the room and it turns the living room into a skating rink. But yeah, Hot Wheels are the greatest toy ever. They're simple. They're fun. You even give an adult a Hot Wheels. They know what to do. They just play with it. It's beautiful. So then when you do Gaslands, it's the childlike love of Hot Wheels mixed with, I love the movement templates. So I don't know if you ever played the X-Wing miniatures game.
No, I've never played that. No.
Don't bother. I don't like Star Wars. But they had the same movement templates, and it was really, really cool that you could have a whole squad of TIE fighters or X-Wings. And if you did it right, they would move in sync with one another using these movement templates. So when you add that to Gaslands with the fun of balancing, like, I got to go fast, I got to go over there with my car's also going to explode. It's such a fun time.
I take it you've played quite a bit of Gaslands then.
Not too much. Let me see. I've done, I want to say every game I've done has been for the on the channel, except one that a friend of mine played when I first introduced him to the game. So, yeah, I think every game we've done has been on the channel, but it's one of those, I love watching the game. Anyone else who films a battle report, I've probably seen it. So, and the scenery is always fun. I love the post-apocalyptic stuff. It's just it's a fun time all around.
Have you done quite a lot of hobbying with the Hot Wheels to kind of make them look more in-universe?
Yeah. All of my, all the stuff I've made, like I said, I started playing Gaslands after the channel was made. So all that stuff was kind of on line. Because unfortunately, and I don't know if you've kind of succumbed to this personally, but now it almost feels like anything I do hobby related kind of has to be recorded. And you might be able to find it in the Discord if you roll back, but I painted this samurai in a synthwave style, and it's just dope. And it was one of those moments where I was getting a little burnt out, and I just decided, you know what? I want to paint. I don't want my stupid phone next to me. It's not going to be on the channel. This is just for me. And I'll tell you, the second I got that thing painted, I thought I should have recorded that.
Yeah.
That'd have been cool.
Yeah, and on hindsight, you know, it's easy to think that, but it could, on the flip side, be that it was that well painted because you were able to switch off the part of your brain that had one eye on the recording and just focus totally on the painting. So there's always that angle too, isn't there?
100%. And, you know, luckily for the most part, all I'm trying to do, especially with I put out little painting shorts, and those are just to keep me painting. But luckily with those, most of it is just make sure it's in frame and in focus. After that, it's just working around the stupid camera.
For just $5 a month on Patreon, you'll get at least 2 new bonus episodes every month. These are extra conversations recorded specifically for Patreon that you won't hear anywhere else. And you could listen to them today by going to bedroombattlefields.com/Patreon. That's bedroombattlefields.com/Patreon. And now, back to the show. So that's Gaslands then. One of the other games you talked about was 5 Parsecs, and that definitely seems like a game that, I mean, it's literally a solo game, isn't it? So
yeah.
How are you finding that so far?
I love 5 Parsecs. I played 2 campaigns of it. The first campaign I did, I was using a mix of miniatures from the Firefly Adventures board game, called Brigands and Browncoats. And if you have a chance to get it, it's not a great game, just mechanically. It's really, really clunky. But you can tell that the guys who made it love the property, they love games, and you can, despite the hiccups in the actual design of the game, it's so fun because you can feel the actual love and passion through the game. So I would definitely recommend taking a look at it, even if it's a little clunky. But the miniatures are great, the stuff that comes with it is great, and I was using that for 5 Parsecs from home, literally just ripping off Firefly, and it was just great. It's a great game. It's basically, you play a war game, it's very simple, you're usually using between 4 and 6 dudes on your side, and then the other side has, I don't know, between 3 and 8. You have a basic objective, or you gotta just take out the bad guys. And then after that, you have about 20 to 30, well, maybe it's a little less, but 15 minutes of, like, I'm just going to look in the book and I'm going to record what happened. And then I get to spend some money. I get to do this. I got to make my loan payments on my spaceship. So there's just the stress of that. But it's a real fun game, especially if you're playing solo. Second campaign, that was when I started painting up on the Space Weirdos playlist. That's the Neon Dreams team. They were the second team that I used for 5 Parsecs.
Yeah, I've got the 5 Parsecs book, and it really appeals to me. I've just not got around to diving in yet, but it seems like the most conducive game, miniatures game I've come across yet, that you could play away from the tabletop, if that makes sense. Like, there's just so much you could do, even if you can't literally get stuff on the table and roll some dice in the moment.
Oh, for sure. And okay, so a friend of mine, he's a real hardcore DM. And one of the things, Dungeon Master for all sorts of war games, I think right now they're doing some sort of Vampire the Masquerade something. But he constantly complains about people who are trying to play, you know, RPGs as a video game, just trying to get as powerful as possible and, you know, just one shot the bad guys. And you can kind of see that in war games. But the nice thing about 5 Parsecs is that, you know, it's hard to level up your dudes. It's not easy. It takes a while, but it is significant. So getting, even being able to move an extra inch for these guys, it means everything. And it's, it makes the progression really, really satisfying. And their random encounter table is super fun too. I remember I was playing a game and I was not having a good time. I was getting smoked. A random encounter comes up halfway through the game, and the in-universe version of like a Tyranid or whatever, Xenomorph, pops up out of the ground and just says it attacks the closest person to him. And he goes into the bad guy's line and just destroys all of them. It was great. I was sitting there just flabbergasted, hooting and hollering. My wife was asking me to calm down. Like, it was good. It was a good time.
Yeah. And I guess all the different potential settings on there, you'll be well sorted with your terrain collection and all the stuff that you've been making as well, presumably.
Oh, man. Well, that's the weird thing, because every time I set up a game, I almost feel like I don't have anything. You know, it's the same thing of, or the same trope of, I got 900 channels, nothing to watch. I have a fridge full of food and nothing to eat. And now I'm setting up a table and I have no terrain. Obviously I do, but it's just, I don't want that terrain. That's old terrain. Or I don't want to just set up the same board that I've had 100 times. So it's definitely hard to do that when you've got the need for novelty.
Are you ever building terrain out with the videos that you put on YouTube?
Nah, unfortunately, like I said, most of my hobby stuff goes on the channel, primarily because, I mean, each 5-minute video, and this is definitely my fault, but each 5-minute video takes between 10 and 16 hours to produce. Because I want to say the filming takes anywhere between 2 and 4 hours, editing takes about twice as long, and then writing the script is... that's always a process, because it's the last thing I do, and every time I'm just sitting there, usually the night before it's going out, just trying to summon up some creativity and some funny, which, if you've ever tried to be funny, tried to summon it up, it doesn't work. And then God bless my wife, because every Tuesday morning, I just sit there scrambling, because whether or not I've gotten the script written or I have to record, it's just, I got to do this. And she's trying to get ready for piano, she teaches piano, so she's trying to get ready for that. And then the kids are doing their thing, and I record in my basement, basically in a walk-in closet that is directly underneath the kitchen of our house. So usually once or twice I have to go upstairs and ask the kids very nicely to not stomp directly above my head. So it's always a scramble every week. So my wife is definitely an angel for putting up with it.
What are some of your favorite pieces that you've made on the channel so far, terrain pieces?
Oh, man. Okay. I'm ashamed to admit this, but I am a chronic navel gazer, so I do go back and I'll watch my own videos. I really will. And the the pathetic thing is I'll usually laugh at them. Every time I'm watching them, I'm sitting there like, yeah, this guy's pretty funny. He gets me. But I think my favorite things I've made, I had one on orc terrain where I just scratch built some, it almost looks like it's built out of sheet metal and corrugated tin. And it just worked really well. Yeah, I don't know. It's probably one of the best things I've ever made. The sci-fi houses were fun. And I'm trying to think of my favorites because, oh, the Skull Mountain was awesome. So it's obviously, you know, it's hard when you're making this stuff because it all tends to bleed into one another, especially when it comes to materials. So for example, I've done rock formations 3 or 4 times, whether it be out of pink insulation foam, your extruded polystyrene that you get in an Amazon box. And I did one out of expanding foam that comes in a can. So it's like a filler. So I just emptied the can on a piece of cardboard. I did it in two. They almost look like loaves of, like, really gross loaves of bread. And cut them up in your normal style. And then I had a Halloween skull, just this, you know, about the size of a baseball. Cut that up and mushed it in there and glued it. Covered the whole thing with, like, spackler wall filler. And it looked great. It was real fun. But after the video came out, my sister, who she's not into war games, but she's definitely got a, what would you call it, macabre sense of design. It's mildly morbid. But she texted me and said, hey, can this be made on a larger scale? And I said, yeah, just do what I did, but bigger. She said, okay. And about a week and a half later, she texts me saying, it took $300, but it worked out. And she had this arch for her door for Halloween. And it was made out of foam, had the same basic rock texture, but she's got spiders and chains and skeleton hands all bought from the dollar store in the Halloween section just above her door.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I told her, you should have talked to me beforehand because I probably could have saved you $250 with some different materials.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've experienced this, but, you know, every time I make something, I'm already prejudging it, especially if it's a video, you know, oh, this is not very good. It's not going to do well. And then it blows up comparatively to my other stuff. Or if I really love something and I'm like, this is special, this is going to go somewhere, it just dies on the vine. But one of my more popular ones was how to make a battle mat. And that was something I've struggled with forever because, you know, a battle mat will make a game. It really does. Because if you're playing on a bare table, it doesn't look good and it breaks the immersion real quick. It doesn't matter what terrain you have. You kind of need that battle mat. So I've tried using foam. I've tried using foam board. And I've just tried a bunch of really bad solutions to this battle mat thing. And then I realized, oh yeah, spray paint and a drop cloth. That's the way to do it. You don't need spackle. Just spray paint the thing. And it really turned out, it's probably one of the more popular videos. I think it's 3 minutes, but it helped me. And I think every single one of my battle reports has included that drop cloth. So even if it wasn't doing well, it's probably the thing I use the most after I made it.
Yeah. And I think with content creation as well, I mean, doing well is a, you know, it's an ambiguous kind of situation where like it's really, a video's done well if you have really enjoyed it and got something out of it. It isn't necessarily about the views it gets, although that's nice. But if you really enjoyed doing it and, you know, you made something good, you learned something, you know, that really is the main goal, I'm assuming. And if people watch it, it's a nice bonus.
Oh, for sure. 100%. And it's just, it's hard to separate those two, especially when you're new at that and new at the whole content thing, you know, because you're really putting a piece of yourself out there like, hey, I made this thing. I made these jokes. I wrote this thing. I filmed all this, poured my heart and soul into it. And, you know, whether or not it dies on the vine, I'm not sitting there thinking, oh, the internet's wrong and I'm right. But it's like there was potential here. There's a couple of good jokes that I really wish people could hear. Actually, the funny thing is one of my personal favorite videos is not on the internet. It's not something I don't think I'll ever post because I don't know the rules of how YouTube works. And I use some copyrighted music. So it's got the Mortal Kombat theme. And it was before I started doing videos, but it's when I wanted to play with the software that I use for editing. Just like, okay, let's figure this out and try and play around. And I used all of my minis. I used all of my terrain that I'd made before then. And the thumbnail for my channel is a little Loxodon. It's an anthropomorphic elephant and a karate gi. So it's this elephant in different, you know, setups of terrain going against different enemies. And then there's dice rollings and all that stuff. And then as the action, quote unquote, kind of builds up, it cuts to a little 3D printed outhouse I have, and then the Ropers theme starts playing. So you go from Mortal Kombat to the Ropers and then a toilet flushing. And then it goes back into the action. And the reason I love it so much is because my 4-year-old son loves it. It's his favorite thing. And, you know, he doesn't say, hey, can we watch the video with the elephant guy? He doesn't say, can we watch the video where the guy's fighting? No, he calls it, hey, can we watch the video where the guy's going potty? Which again, I know what he's talking about, but my whole thing is like, if you say this in public, I'm going to have to look at people and just explain some stuff.
So what's like, it's been really good to learn more about what you're up to. Just interested as we come to the end of our conversation about what's next on the channel. Like, any particular projects that you're got in the pipeline or even started working on?
Well, unfortunately, just with how busy I am, I'm able to do, like, whatever you see put out is usually what I did that week. This stuff is fresh. It does not sit. I've never once been ahead of schedule, but it's probably just going to be more of the same. A lot of terrain building, probably more battle reports now, because, you know, with terrain, it's one of those things where I have to figure out what I'm doing and get a basic idea on how to do it. Amass the materials, which just means rifling through the garbage, but it's still still a process. So most of the stuff that's coming down the pipe is going to be more terrain, more battle reports, hopefully a little more one-page rules. And then, this is dependent on how things go, but we'll see if I'm trying to find small companies that do small, cheap supplies that people don't know about and just get in contact with them, because it does suck that a lot of this has a real monetary barrier to entry. And I would like to find the cracks in that barrier so that, you know, anyone who wants to do this that doesn't really have the extra cash can just make their own stuff, play their own games, and do their own thing without having to use books and pop cans.
Well, big thanks for the chat, Anthony. Where can the listener go to find your channel?
The channel's just Gergen Gaming. That's G-E-R-G-E-N Gaming. The channel's got a little picture of an elephant wearing a karate gi.
Thanks very much for listening to this episode of the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. If you enjoy the show, then please do share it with someone else you think might enjoy it too. And be sure to check out our Discord community of like-minded hobbyists, which you could find at bedroombattlefields.com/Discord. It'd be great to see you in there.